Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast. I want to tell you about my friends over at Naked Vine. Find them at 1624 Clarkson Road in Chesterfield, Missouri. They're serving up all your favorite wine, whiskey, and local craft beers Tuesday through Saturday. You can come visit them for live music this week on Tuesday, June 12th. Rock Paper Podcast presents singer-songwriter storytelling showcase with Joe Bozzelli, Seth Brand, and Tyler Lewis, and that's 7 to 9, $5 cover. Come on out for that show. It's going to be a great night. Real limited seating, acoustic, storytelling, listening room show, so it's going to be a good time over there. On Thursday, June 14th, you can catch Phil and Carson from the Scandaleros there. On Friday, June 15th, you can catch Dana Michael Anderson Band there. And on Saturday, June 16th, Beth Lee and the Breakups. So all these shows and more, you can be found at nakedvine.net and follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Get involved. Come out and see what's going on up here at Naked Vine and tell them Rock Paper Podcast sent you.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Hey, this is Eric Brown, and you're listening to the Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
After we moved to St. Louis, when my son was five, I took him to the art museum here. Because what better place is there for children than surrounded by priceless artifacts? Like, I took him to the art museum because I wanted to introduce him to art, I thought. It turns out I wanted to chase him around for 3 hours going, please, God, no, stop, stop it. Why are you like this? What? Because he hated it. He hated it. He was so bored. I'm 30. I barely like the art museum. I go to the art museum so I can pretend I'm from old money. Like I'm the Kennedy that drives a Kia. Just wander the museum like a dumb socialite going, I don't get it. I don't get that either. Oh, this one has a naked lady on it. I understand titties. Ah! You know. Yes. I do that wolf howl at home a lot. I bet it's miserable to live with me. See, that's why I'm good at it. I can just pull it off any old time. Okay, new plan. I'm going to edit one clap and a bunch of me howling like a wolf into the album. That's after every joke, it'll be me howling like a wolf. And I'm like, whoa, that's weird. But I'm making him go to the stairwell where there's nothing of value and jump up and down and burn off all of his excessive energy because he's little and wiry and fast. He's not fat like me. Like, we're working on it because I want him to fit in at school. We're not there. And making him jump up and down and burn his energy off. And he's like, is this good, Dad? Is this good? And I'm like, yeah, just keep, just more. Just keep going until you can't get away from me anymore. And he's like, okay, is this good? And like, are we good? And I'm like, yeah, can we get through the next corridor without you running off or touching anything? And he's like, yeah. Dad, I still really want to touch the armor. Yeah, me too. But you don't. Like, that urge never, you die wanting to touch the armor. You just don't do it. We get through the museum without incident, except he touched one thing. It was the Water Lilies by Monet. Maybe some of you have heard of it. It's one of the most famous paintings ever. People that don't know shit about art know that painting, all right? Standing in front of it, it's huge and gorgeous, and I see his little hand going towards it, and there was nothing I could do. It was like a car crash. He's going, and I went, no! Like, have you guys ever felt everything? His hand's going, he touches it, and I go, no, like as loud and as quietly as I could. Like loud so he would know I would kill him, but quiet so a guard wouldn't hear. I don't want to get a guard's attention. Have him come over and go, what's going on over here? And I go, I don't know, he's not with me. He goes, why do you look alike? Coincidence, I throw my boy at him and run. But his hand touches it, and I go, no, and he goes, nah, it's okay, Dad, I didn't get any paint on my hands. Yeah, I know, it's 100 years old, man. I know. You guys know who else has touched that painting? Monet. Monet and my son, that's it, short list. Monet took his failing eyesight and a paintbrush and made something beautiful. My son took his gross, greasy little hand and went all the way down it. I don't know if you guys know this, oil from your skin ruins oil paint. So in like 200 years, when your great, 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 great grandkids go look at it and there's a handprint, I'm sorry. I looked up its value. I looked up the painting's value during my heart palpitations. $30 million. I was like, hey man, if this painting falls, everything you like about being alive is over. Here's what happens if that painting falls. They're gonna take me out back to the courtyard and shoot me execution style in the head. I'm gone, and then the museum will just own you. You live in a closet sustained by fish heads from a metal bucket, sweeping at night till you die too? Is that what you want? Is that what you want? It's not what he wanted. It's not what he wanted. It's not. I said, if you touch anything else in this museum, those mummies in the basement are gonna get up and chase you around. And then he cried, and that's when I knew I was a good dad. Airplane mode, by the way, just so it wouldn't. I don't want it to.
Yeah. Should be good. I'll go ahead and put mine on airplane, too.
Or do you do you. I just didn't want to interrupt anything and be.
The other day, I did a podcast I was telling you about with those guys.
Yeah.
And my alarm went off. The Lion King theme was my alarm to wake up.
Yeah.
And they've got a kick out of that. But, like, and I was like, yeah, you got that way I wake up feeling like King of the Jungle every day.
That's
like,
awesome.
It's pretty good. It'll get your attention to that. Hi-ya.
Oh, of course. And it's delightful.
Yeah.
That's actually a really good alarm sound. What a way to wake up every day. Like, everything comes into focus and the light rises.
Oh,
that's delightful.
I feel like Simba. You know,
yeah.
It's like,
have you seen the opening? There's a video on YouTube. It's like a minute long. It's very dumb. But it's the opening sequence of The Lion King with the opening of Ba with the Ba over it.
Oh, yeah.
You remember all that like ethereal noise before it gets heavy or whatever? But it's like all that.
Right.
It's very stupid. And it matches up way better than it should.
My name is Kid.
Yeah, that's around the time. That's when Grafiki holds up Simba. That's when that. Yeah, it's pretty funny.
That record. Was played a whole lot during my high school years and parties and stuff and all that. That whole record was pretty solid.
Yeah, I was way into angry music when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, he's mad? Well, I'm mad too.
Right.
Are they angry? Okay, cool. Then I'm into this.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. Let's. I'd like to do a nice little hard open and. And we'll get into it. Not like Chris Hardwick, you know, like you just kind of press record. And,
Oh, we're recording already?
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're about a half an hour, like, you know. So.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, everybody. Shane Presley here. Rock Paper Podcast coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri. Hanging out today at a St. Louis Bread Co. with Eric Brown. Welcome to the show, man.
Hi. How are you, Shane?
I'm great. I'm glad to... Glad to be here. You know, these are nice, man. You know, you can come in, you can grab a beverage, a delicious treat, and or a bowl of soup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a nice bread bowl, whatever it is.
Still not used to calling it St. Louis Bread Co. It's Panera everywhere I've ever lived, except for St. Louis, and then it's got a different name.
I don't know why that is. I've never done the research, but it is. It is a weird thing.
I call it Panera. I'm just committed to calling it Panera.
Right.
But yeah.
I think everybody knows, but yeah, it is. I'm not sure why St. Louis is the one particular place where we
did it originate here. That might be it.
Possibly, but like, why not? Why is it not?
Because if it's in Philadelphia, you wouldn't call it St. Louis Bread. Maybe that would be confusing. Well, Boston Market.
And we call them Philly cheesesteaks. You know, it's like just, you know, whatever it is. Like,
you know, I don't know. They should just call it Panera everywhere.
Right.
Make it easier on me and you and all these people. Am I being loud enough?
No. Oh, well, you're fine.
Oh, okay, cool.
I thought you were mumbling. I thought you were going to say too loud. But no, you're fine.
I'll warm up.
But we are, we're here hanging out, but we got, brand new record to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
We got a show, all kinds of fun stuff. But I guess I'll start because we just met a bit ago.
Maybe a month.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Officially, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
With through Brandon Judd, mutual friend. I saw you guys hanging out, and so we formally met that day, and then I was like, you know, let's hang out and do a podcast and get to know each other a little better. This is what the show's great for, is, you know, have actually be able to sit down and have a conversation and, you know, like I said, get to know each other a little better. So
yeah, definitely.
But you are, I do know you're pretty new to St. Louis.
Yeah.
So I guess where'd you grow up then?
I grew up in rural Illinois, about an hour south of Springfield, Illinois, Ramsey. There's 1,000 people there. It's a very small village. Very conservative. It's technically like a township. It's nothing. Graduating class had 29 people. Very little.
Wow.
It's pretty awful. Backwoods place. Lived there, then went to college in Carbondale, Illinois, Southern Illinois. Then moved to St. Louis after that about 4 years ago.
Okay. And was that just to get out of the small town, or was it just to pursue comedy?
A couple things. I have a son who lives in Carbondale still. His mom and I, long story short, we had him and then went to Carbondale together to go to college, and then we separated while we were there, and the reason I picked St. Louis, nothing against St. Louis, but the reason I picked St. Louis as opposed to Chicago or somewhere else is just literal proximity to be an involved father, right, versus, daddy's got to follow his dreams, good luck, and then go to Los Angeles or something. So St. Louis was like the most affordable / closest geographical, I can't talk, geographically closest city, and I could afford to live here and still not totally abandon my responsibilities to another person.
Right.
So that's why.
Yeah.
In a nutshell.
I mean, and did you know at the time that St. Louis had a pretty good, pretty solid comedy scene going here?
Yeah, that's part of the reason that we ended up moving here, is because we came and visited several times and did the open mics and got to know, like, Stryker, and we got to know Brandon, and we got to know, like, kind of just on the fringe, like, barely, like, you see them in passing and get to know them a little bit. Bobby Jaycox, just, you know, the friendlier people. And, so coming to do mics and get to know people made it feel more welcoming. And then after you're like, oh, there's a pretty cool scene happening here. There's a lot of, and it was around the time, like 2014, 2015, a lot of the sort of indie stuff really started popping up everywhere. Like Fatal Bus Accident was happening, like that. A lot of stuff happened. And so between all the comics being polite, the majority of them being very funny, and then also just, again, the proximity thing, it was like, okay, this is a no-brainer.
Yeah.
And moving here, originally I thought of it as sort of a temporary step, maybe 3 years, and then my wife and I just bought a house in Belleville, which is not St. Louis proper, but it's where we can afford to live, and it all worked out, long story short. But so now I think we're pretty much here now. So we are more or less St. Louis residents, and this was sort of not part of the original plan, but here we are.
I'm born and raised a little outside of St. Louis, but I lived in the St. Louis area all my life, and so it's always been home. I don't really know anything different, but I love it here, though. Like, I don't see any reason to go anywhere else.
Right.
I love what we have going on in our comedy scene and our music scene. And, we got great food, great venues, everything. I mean, obviously, I definitely would love to venture around and see the world more, but sure. I think St. Louis is always going to be home.
It's a good place to be, honestly. Yeah. The cool thing about St. Louis, too, and maybe I'm wrong, but I think the nice thing about St. Louis is it's a city that is, how do I say it? It's not, I don't mean this negatively, it's not known for its arts, necessarily, mm-hmm. and so I think all the people, like the comedians and musicians and artists, are like, oh no, we can do some cool stuff here, so everyone's mm-hmm. kind of trying to establish, like, we can't coast on the identity of the city. We all have to be pushing and doing great work.
Sure.
Or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense.
I feel like...
we have a lot to prove. We have something to prove.
For sure.
That's all.
Yeah. I think there's a strong work ethic in the whole city, because we don't have a thriving industry or any, you know, different things here. So, like, people have to hustle to make other things work, because, you know, so I think that's why our music scene and our comedy scene does well,
mm-hmm.
because they're all grinding, trying to make it happen. And
you can't be here doing it and be lazy.
Right.
There's nothing for you. If you're not doing the work, there's nothing to coast on. It just doesn't exist, which is great.
But as far as, like, arts as a history, like, I mean, we probably don't have, you know, it's not probably not as known as a lot of cities, but... But, you know, we definitely are rich in blues history.
In
music. I mean, obviously, named a hockey team after it, everything, mm-hmm. and stuff. But
I never put that together.
Oh, yeah. But
weird.
But I mean, this is sort of the obviously it always worked its way up the river, but you know, St. Louis was home to a lot of great blues artists that have since passed, obviously.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, it's rich in blues culture and stuff as far as that goes and stuff. So, I mean, and now it's like that's what's fitting too is now having the National Blues Museum right here in St. Louis, so too. So
yeah,
it's pretty cool
for sure.
But so I guess were you was comedy always there? Were you the funny kid in class or anything like that or that kind of stuff? Or
I was the kid in class who would sit in the back and make fun of the class. I wasn't the class clown. Sure. I would make fun of whoever was being the class clown to my friend that I was sitting by.
Right.
I am sort of a wallflower. If I know you, I'm loud and annoying, and if I don't, I'm quiet as a mouse. You know what yeah. I mean? So, but yeah, I've always been obsessed with comedy. Literally, like as far back as I can remember, like whether it was Three Stooges, like slapping each other in the face,
yeah.
And then getting older and appreciating some of the wordplay, the Marx Brothers, and just all that sort of stuff. And then like, you know, stand up, obviously a huge fan. Simpsons, always. Pretty much, yeah. I remember practicing like pratfalls in my room so I could pull them off at school and be like that way if somebody like, if I just bumped into somebody gently that would never actually knock you down, I could like throw myself on the floor and roll the right way so it would look like, you know, like the right thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just obsessed with like trying to be funny and trying to figure out exactly how those things work. So yeah, it's been, yeah, lifelong obsession.
Yeah.
My
middle school years, I was like very heavily influenced by Chris Farley.
Mm-hmm. We all were.
Yeah. I mean, from SNL to, you know, Tommy Boy and Black Sheep were like on repeat all the time.
Yeah.
And I can recall, like, I remember one time coming out of like a Great Clips or whatever, I was with my buddy and his mom, and like they didn't hold the door for me, so like I did like the, you know, where I kicked it and I put my hand on, I was like, oh, you know, like you know, like grab my nose and that kind of thing. So yeah, you're practicing your falls, and I was you know, acting like a broken nose doing the you know, like ketchup packet, you know, that.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Stuff, so.
But yeah, no, comedy's been my favorite thing for my whole life. Mm-hmm. I still love it. It's weird. I don't get tired of it. Like, my brother's, like, funnier than anybody I know, but he doesn't care about it. He's not interested in comedy. He doesn't care. But, like, there's a thing, like, where we can both go see a stand-up, and I'll be delighted by whatever, and he's like, he just calls the punchline. So whisper, he's like, he's going to say this, and then the guy will say that. Like, no matter how funny it is, he like deconstructs it, and then he's like bored by it because it's so simple to him. But with me, I'm like, I don't know what I'm getting at with this. I just, there's always been a magic to it. And whenever I enjoy like the new Mulaney special, I really liked.
Sure.
Like whenever I watch it, it makes me feel like I'm 6 years old again watching whatever it was that was amazing to me at that time.
Yeah.
Like it just and immediately puts me back in that place in those like little kid shoes, and I'm just excited by whatever I'm hearing or seeing again.
Yeah.
Nothing really does that for me except comedy.
Yeah, I love that, man. I'm glad that I'm not like your brother, because like I love that I can still enjoy it all.
Yeah.
I mean, like sometimes I might go back and watch. I mean, I don't really like try to break it all down, but like I'm just glad, even as much as like I'm involved in comedy and music, doing this show and different things and whatever, it's like that's still fun to me.
Mm-hmm.
I can still be thoroughly entertained by this and not be not get sick of it, not trying to, you know, sometimes like you can kind of see some where things are going or whatever.
Sure.
But you know, it's like I'm not trying. I still have a good time with it also.
Oh, definitely. Well, it bums me out because it doesn't bum me out, but like with him is like I want to invite him to like come to the show, and like he has, like he's great, he has a good time and stuff, but like it's just one of those things where it has to be like the pinnacle of whatever is happening for him to be like, okay, that's pretty funny.
Sure.
But like he's just so like, and again, he's not even, I'm making him sound like a jerk, he's not a jerk.
All right.
But it's just like he's just jaded, he's just like, yeah, I know how jokes work.
Yeah.
He doesn't do stand up, he doesn't care about it, but he just gets it, and like it's just not exciting to him.
Right.
And that makes me sad. I'm the same as you. It's like I feel bad for him, because I'm like, man, this stuff's pretty fun. Just turn that shitty little part of your head off.
Right.
And just enjoy it. Like it's good. Just have fun with it. And he's like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
Like I just see where it's going. I'm not interested.
Sure.
I'm like, ah, so sad.
Yeah. What was do you recall your first comedy show, like actually going to the comedy club?
The first time I went to a comedy club, it was Father's Day in, I would have been 18, so what, 2003 probably. Okay. My dad took my brother and I, Comedy Etc. used to be at one of the hotels in Fairview. I forget which now.
Ramada or something.
Something. We went and stayed at that hotel with my dad because he just wanted to get us out of town because, again, we're from Ramsey, there's nothing to do there. So we went to Ramada. And then there was a comedy club, a comedy show happening in the club that night. And if you stay at the hotel, you get to go in for free. So my dad and I went to that. And my brother was too young to get in because of alcohol. So he just played video games in the room. Long story short, I don't remember who was on the show. I don't remember anything about it. Literally nothing. Except the headliner kept making jokes about, would you suck a dick to keep your kids safe or something? I don't know what it was. It was one of those things where, like, I remember watching it and being like, I felt like my brother. I was just like, I don't like this. Like, I just remember being like bummed out by it because I had heard Mitch Hedberg and I've listened to Seinfeld and I'm like, oh, a real comedy club, let's go. And I was like, yeah. Oh shit, I've been listening to the best comedians in the world. And then apparently comedy just happens everywhere and it's different levels of quality. You know what I'm saying? So that was the first time. And then I didn't go back to a real show for a really long time, actually, because I remember just kind of being bummed out by it. But then, like, since then, I've seen, like, Hannibal, and I've been to so many comedy shows since then. But that was the first one live that I saw, and, it was not great. Yeah. It was not great.
Right.
But it's kind of a bummer.
I can't recall the... I can recall the first concert I went to, but I can't recall the first comedian I went to see. Again, I was at the time I was watching a ton of Comedy Central Presents and all the different things.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like just a huge fan trying to absorb as much as I could. And like, and I was around that, especially middle school, going into high school and stuff. I was like, all the friends were like, oh, hey, you ever heard of, Dane Cook or Daniel Tosh or whatever. I was like, yeah, a long time ago. Like, that was kind of that thing. Like, I was like fans of those guys before they, become superstars and stuff.
Yeah. So. Well, I remember liking this sounds like a hipster thing, but like Dane Cook, I remember watching his half hour where he's wearing the black tank top.
Oh, yeah.
And being like, this is really fun. Like when I was maybe 14, I was like, this is great.
Sure. Oh,
but then like 5 years later, that's what everybody, and it's like, no, he's been around for a long time now. Yeah.
And I think part of that, is all at the right time for us. Especially the physical, comedy and stuff, doing the whole alien thing where, threw the water bottle on his head. Jumping around on stage like that and stuff.
I forgot. I don't remember the bits well. Yeah. But I remember when you're saying them, I'm like, I remember that.
That's about all that I can do. Like, I can quote movies and comedy and stuff. It's all up here on a Rolodex.
Catalog,
don't ask me anything about math or history or anything.
Dude, no idea. Right. I don't remember. You could tell me a math equation and it's gone, but you can, quote part of a joke from 12 years ago. Sure. And I'm like, one. I remember that. All right. But, yeah.
But, I think a lot of that, granted, it wasn't, the best writing, but the fact that the way he delivered it with the physicality and stuff and, he made that joke and made it what it was. And and of course, at the time when we were teenagers and stuff.
Yeah, pretty much,
And that's that was funny to us.
This is my wavelength.
Yeah, right.
So, no, exactly. Yeah. Well, also, I will say, and this is not to negate, I'm not a huge Dane Cook fan, but I don't actively hate him. I don't care. That said, at the time, though, in high school, pretty much anything that was on Comedy Central, I would watch.
Yeah.
Whether I thought it was funny or not, because I was just like, this is probably funny, I just don't get it.
Right.
So, including stand-up, including, because on Friday night they would do, stand-up from, 8 p.m. to midnight or something?
Yeah,
night they would do, or every Friday night. So I would, actively not make plans with my friends for weekend nights, because I'm like, I got stuff to do. And I would just watch Comedy Central alone all night, and then Saturday I would hang out with my friends. But Friday night, whichever night it was, Friday or Saturday, I would just stay in and watch all the stand-up, whether it was good or not. And I remember watching a lot of duds, but I was just like, this is going to be important someday. But I wasn't planning on doing stand-up then necessarily or anything. Like I wanted to, but I didn't think that again, from the small town thing, it's part of it is you are from a town of 1,000 people where, not to be mean, nobody really ever leaves and does anything too impressive. I'm sure they do, but not that whenever you're in high school, you just don't see it happening.
Right.
But it's the thing where it's like, well, I don't know, how do you even write jokes? And then if you write some jokes and they're any good, how do you go say them?
Sure.
And then where do you go tell them? And then who cares when you've said them? Like, it's sort of this, all this kind of dirt just piled on top of it. Like, you want to do it down here, and then yeah. it just gets stacked with lots and lots of delays and just just a lack of confidence, yeah. honestly. But I would watch all the stand-up, and I wasn't writing jokes or anything at the time, but when I was like 17, I decided I wanted to do stand-up. Basically, Mitch Hedberg made me want to do stand-up.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, like, because a lot of the stand-up that I would see, like Dan Cook and all this, like you said, the physicality was funny and stuff like that. But a lot of stand-up, too, is also, so my wife does this, and my kids are annoying, and I'm 17, 16. I don't know what you're talking about, and I don't care, because I can't relate to it. But the Mitch Hedberg, Mitch Hedberg, basically, like, watching that, I was like, oh, these jokes are really funny and clever, and also they're not about anything that I don't understand.
Right.
Or can't even relate to. It's just, they're just silly, purely funny, weird. So that made me want to do stand-up. So I bought a notebook, and I just wrote a bunch. That notebook is long gone. None of these jokes ever made it to stage. They're just a bunch of Mitch Hedberg rip-off, bad, just awful. I don't remember them, but I can tell you they were bad. I know that.
Yeah.
But I wrote jokes for like 6 months with plans to come to St. Louis and do the Funny Bone open mics. That's like 2 hours from where I live at. And I was like, I'm going to go do it. And I never did it. So that's when I was 17. And then I finally did stand-up like 6 years later. All new jokes, all new whatever. Not obviously, but so I wanted to do it then. I think when I was like 14 or 15, 16, I wanted to write animation. I wanted to write cartoons and be a voice actor. And then Mitch Hedberg was like, on Home Movies, and then he was doing stand-ups, and he's kind of going back, and I was like, okay, so he's a voice actor and a stand-up. Maybe I could do that. And then kind of, you know, like, just started writing jokes and then never did anything with it until years later.
Yeah. And Mitch, man, I love that guy. I was lucky enough to actually get to see him.
Lucky man.
I caught him at the pageant, just months before he passed.
Yeah, The Padre, was that with the Dave Attell tour? Because he was on that right before he died, didn't he? Wasn't he with Dave Attell and
this particular tour was supposed to be a co-headline with him and Stephen Lynch.
Oh, wow.
And Lynch backed out because he landed a role as the wedding singer on Broadway.
Oh, okay.
And so, so Mitch brought some friends, and I can't recall any of the
friends. Oh, no, you're good.
But it wasn't Attell, but...
I gotcha.
But, yeah, it was like...
Mitch at the pageant threw me off, because I knew it was, like, kind of big, but I didn't realize he was, like...
But I think that's why the date was supposed to be a co-headline thing. And
yeah.
Like, and then, I guess, instead of to honor the deal, he just brought some other friends of his and stuff, so...
Yeah.
That was probably almost 15 years ago or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It's been a long time, and... I was a huge fan of Stephen Lynch as well, too.
So yeah, me too. Yeah.
I would have... I've seen him a bunch, too, but...
Yeah.
Mitch was... I still, like, almost quote him daily.
Yeah.
I mean, because, like you're saying, he had jokes about, like, literally jokes about everything.
Everything and nothing.
And,
yeah,
and then,
crazy.
Like, I would even just, like, you know, I go to work at the... You know, there's the vending machine, and, like, I think of the...
Uh-huh.
You know... Without that door, it was hard times for the vending machine. Man.
The HH button.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't learn my AABBCCs. God damn it.
Yeah. He's like, what if they had a vending machine for vending machines, man? That'd be real fucking big.
Yeah.
So all those stuff. I mean, just like those go through my head daily, and like, I'm a huge fan of his stuff, and
yeah.
Like, I'm glad that his work, you know, like that I guess they released it in one app. You know, after he passed.
Do you believe in Gosh?
Yeah. So, but I'm glad that all that is recorded and can live on, because so people can still continue to discover how great he is.
No, for sure. His is like the, I use the word celebrity loosely, because I know he wasn't that big of a deal, but to me he was like the top. But yeah, like his is like the first celebrity death that I ever was like, that hurts.
Yeah.
I didn't know, my friend Thaddeus called me, and he was like, hey man. I was like, what? He goes, bad news for you. And I was like, because he knows a huge fan. He's like, well, I was like, what? And he goes, well, Mitch Hedberg died yesterday. He overdosed or had the heart disease. It's murky. Either way, we know what he was doing.
Yeah.
Either way, he passed away. And I was like, what? No, he didn't. And he's like, no, he didn't. And I remember being like, well, fuck. That, I remember being actually sad and not knowing why. I was like, why do I actually care? But man, this really bums me out.
For sure.
But yeah, first celebrity death that ever really hit me like that.
Yeah.
Like, well, you saw him live, which is awesome. I was like, I'm going to go see him.
Oh, yeah.
And it just didn't.
I kind of have a similar thing too. Now, it wasn't to that level, but I like Tim Wilson a lot. He's big on Bob and Tom for a while.
Yeah, okay, so, yeah. The name is super familiar.
Yeah, and he, my dad got me into him. My dad listened to Bob and Tom all the time. And,
yeah.
And so, like, introduced me to, like, Rodney Carrington and all a lot of these guys that were regulars on those shows and stuff. But I started listening to Tim Wilson, and I liked his stuff, and I was, like, got excited because I finally got to see him live. He was coming to, we had the Valley Park Funny Bone at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And he was coming there, and it was, like, a Sunday show because I couldn't, that was the only night I could make it there. And, I remember, like, 8 people showed up or whatever, and they were, like, debating if they were going to do the show or cancel it just because it was such a low turnout.
Yeah.
And then they decided, let's go ahead and do it because for these people to show up, we'll do half a show kind of thing. So I got to see him do like, you know, 20, 25 minutes or whatever, and then he kind of just phoned it in, like, he get his paycheck kind of thing, and, you know, it wasn't, the crowd wasn't there, but, you know, so, but he, and then he passed away, like, right after that, and, like, that was just a real bummer that the time I got to see him was not his best, and then, like, you know, and then, of course, he passed, so it's like,
that sucks,
but, you know, again, like, at least I was there. It's, you know, there's a lot of them I didn't get to see before they, you know, so
for
it's
sure.
Like, and that's always, that's why, that's a lot of why I live the way I do, like, going to music as much and comedy as much, like, because I'm always like, you know, it's a good model for anything in life, but, like, you know, you never know when your time's up, either theirs or mine or whatever,
right.
It's like, I'm just gonna go out and have a good time all the time, and, like, so I try to do that as much as I can, and, like, so I just, always going buying the concert tickets and going, so.
Yeah. Well, like, my brother and I just went and saw Weird Al in Columbia, Missouri.
Yeah.
They're doing the ill-advised vanity tour, so there's no parodies. They're doing, like, deep cuts from the albums, and it's, like, there's no... Have you seen him live by chance?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, there's no costume changes. There's no multimedia.
Oh.
It's them playing, like, a band. Like, they have instruments out. They're sitting on stools, and they're just playing like a normal band.
Yeah.
But they're just doing, like, songs off even worse. Like, songs that a casual fan would have no idea what they were. You know what I mean? But we just went.
How was it?
It was so good.
Yeah.
It was great. Yeah. Like, some of the songs from the 80s were, like, making me tear up. I'm not sure why. I still can't figure out why. But, like, they did, like, Midnight Star, which is not a song you would generally think. It's about tabloids. I don't know if you know it. But you wouldn't generally think of it. But that's what they opened with. And I was like, just part, because I've been listening to Weird Al, like, well, I said I was obsessed with comedy. I found Weird Al in 96, and I still like him as much as I did then. Huge fan, been a fan the whole time that I've been alive. Well, not alive. As soon as I knew he existed, hardcore.
Yeah.
But some of those songs from the 80s, they did, like, Melanie from Even Worse. Like, for some reason, I was sitting there, like, I was, like, having to wipe tears out of my eyes because I was, like, so happy to just hear them live and be like, this tour is for me. Because, like, I like the parodies a lot, whatever, but Amish Paradise is great, but I don't care. Like, these are weird, deep track songs that are not for everybody. And I don't know, it was giving me, like, emotional, for two reasons, I think. A, it was cool to see them just hear, I've been fans of these songs forever. I've been a fan of these songs forever. And also, there's a part of it, kind of going in with what you were saying about death and dying. It's not that they're dying, but they're in their 60s. None of those, they've been around for 40 years. They look old now. Even Weird Al, who's like a vegan who doesn't drink or do anything, he looks old now. And so there's a thing of like, they're not going to be around forever.
Sure.
And it's, again, they're healthy, they're fine, I get whatever, but it's, there's still parts like this era is going to come to a close and there's no way I'm not going to cry when he passes, you know. My hope might be another 30 years, but just going to see it live and hear all these weird songs that you would never hear on a normal tour was worth going. It was so good.
Yeah. I saw them up in Columbia. They did like a free show out on the streets outside of Blue Note. Mm-hmm. But it was the full on comedy show, costume changes and everything. And I loved it. Like, I had so much fun. And the fact it was a free show kind of thing, it's like we could get up right up front. So I got there early and got up close. And but yeah, he literally a wardrobe change for every song.
Yeah.
And like, And they played the skits in between, like where he's talking to Eminem.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That one. You know what I'm saying? No.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No. We get a couple guys in here. No, I'm not gay. I don't do that. No, we'll get a couple guys in here. You know what I'm saying? No, I'd rather not. I don't want to do that. But I've seen him live 3 times now. I've seen him twice on the like normal, like 07 and then 2011, where they do the costume, the whole thing. Yeah. So that's why I was excited for this one, because it's just a totally deconstructed.
Yeah.
And then Emo Phillips opens for him doing stand-up, which... it was great.
Yeah.
It was just a bizarre, weird, funny character. Yeah,
right.
It was cool though.
Yeah, man. I there's a lot of that. Like, I love some of those originals and stuff that he, you know, like you're saying, like he, some of those deeper songs, not all the big hits, I guess. And stuff,
yeah, absolutely.
It's funny that he's still doing. Like, I mean, like obviously just the record went out, but like he also just did like a polka thing for Hamilton.
Oh yeah, which I listened to like daily for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Did you like the I didn't listen to Hamilton at all.
Yeah, I don't know.
I listened to the polka though, and I was like, I should get into Hamilton. Yeah. This is pretty cool.
Right. I just love that, you know, he's still, you know, always working.
Like, yeah. Well, I don't know if this is true. Brandon, I was talking to Brandon. I wrote with Brandon, Judd, and Angela and Smith, and Brandon was telling me that apparently Weird Al is not going to release records anymore or albums at all. They're just going to be doing like singles and sort of digital like one-offs, and just kind of, which makes sense actually. Mm-hmm. But that's part of that thing I was saying a minute ago, where it's like, well, it's the end of an era. Like, I can't go, like when Mandatory Fun came out, I went and bought it for my son because he turned 4. He's way too young for it. Honestly, I bought it for me as an excuse for him. But I think it's like when the new record comes out, I own all of them. So ever since 96, every time a new one comes out, I go and I buy it and I put it on. I listen to it all the way through. And I guess that's just done now, which is not a big deal.
Yeah.
But there's a part of me that's like, dang it, it's just a little sad. But either way.
I saw, like, I think around when that time when Mandatory Fun came out, I think somewhere around then they were doing like a deal, like an accordion box with all the records, all the vinyl, every copy of, and I was like, man, I would love to have that. Like, I think that would just, I mean, I don't know, it was probably like $1,000 or whatever.
I think it's like $500 bucks, like
whatever.
Legit, yeah.
But, I mean, like, that would be a cool piece to have.
Yeah.
Like, so, especially just, I'm a vinyl enthusiast myself, so like having them all would be
amazing. Yeah. I dabble in vinyl, not enough to spend $500
bucks. Yeah, right.
I'm a big enough fan to own it. My bank account won't let me buy it. Yeah. That's all it is.
Right.
Yeah, because it was all the original albums and then one album of like one-offs and weird songs that never got on anything else.
Yeah.
But like, so yeah, I would have loved it.
That would have been cool, man.
Oh my God.
Maybe one of these days I'll stumble upon it somewhere.
Oh yeah. Okay, I will own that eventually, just not today.
Right.
Yeah.
I one of my favorite Weird Al, I've shared a story on here, but I love, it's just a funny, super funny premise to me. I don't know if you ever heard it, but Brian Posehn was on Conan one night, and I'm a fan of both of those guys.
Of course.
But Posehn had just become a father.
Yeah.
And he was talking to Conan about like raising his kid, and he said that he was going to, he was debating on how to raise his kid and like how to introduce Weird Al to his kid. And he's like, do I teach him all the originals so he appreciates the parody versions?
Yeah.
Or do I just introduce him to Weird Al and let him think that those
are the original?
Yeah. And then like, and then he's like, and then someday he's at a high school dance and then he's like, who's this guy over here ruining Eat It? You know, and he's like,
that's hilarious.
It was just, it killed me. That was like such a funny idea of how like, especially to like, mess with your kid, like that's funny to me. Like, that's one of those jokes. It might not pay off for a long time.
It's a lifelong.
It's a great joke when it does.
Oh, definitely.
Like, so.
Well, in the vein with that, there are still songs like because a lot of the 80s stuff, like because Weird Al's first record I think is 82. There's a lot of those songs from the whole 80s catalog that I don't know the original like at all.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's still songs like, you know, 20 years later, that I'm like, I know the Weird Al one up and down religiously. And then I'll hear the original, like, on the radio, like, a Schnucks or something. And I'm like, oh, that's what this song is. I know, like, Jurassic Park is a parody of something. That's a 93, from 93. But, like, MacArthur Park, I think, is the song. I don't know that song at all. I heard it one day, like, a couple years ago. And I was like, oh, interesting that I have no idea what this song is. I don't know who sang it. I don't care. The Weird Al one is literally the original for me.
Sure.
So that's what I know it as.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, man. Well, you were talking albums, Weird Al albums and all this stuff, but you have your own album. Like, like I teased at the beginning, we do have Patterns available now on iTunes and Spotify and wherever you're getting digital music and stuff today.
Pretty much everywhere. Yeah.
I listened the other night, and then I listened to it on the way over here today, just getting ready. And like,
so you've heard my voice a lot today. Yeah. I'm sorry.
But it was I love it, man. Especially like I told you the other day, but like there's some material on there about growing up in a mobile home, or having a, or I guess not growing up, but owning a mobile home and stuff, and like, and that stuff killed me because I currently live in a mobile home, so like. I know exactly, you know, I related to that
the grievances.
Most. Yeah. So,
yeah.
There's a lot of that stuff that was like very relatable to me and stuff. So like,
yeah.
And that makes it even funnier for me. So
for like, sure.
When I can, I've been there. So,
yeah. No, that's awesome. Because honestly, the album is a lot of those stories are from like, I started stand up in 2011. A lot of the material on the album is from like basically 2012 to about 2016, early 2017, like that 5-year gap. That said, a lot of it's really, well, you listen to it, a lot of it's really, really specific to whatever I was thinking about at that certain time. But I'm glad that, and I've gotten some feedback from you just now and then in general, that it manages to be so specific to me that it almost like pops back around to being like hyper relatable again without being that pandery, so you know when you're doing this. It's like, no, this is very much every album. I say on that record so many times because everything is so specific to what I'm doing, where I'm at, whatever I'm thinking about. But it's so specific to me that it has like kind of flipped back around where some of that material people can hear it and go, oh, I've either been there or I've been in a predicament so similar that I'm going to go ahead and relate to this as though you're speaking directly to me, which is, I don't know if that makes sense, but it's kind of, I'd never intended to do that. I'd never thought of my stand-up as necessarily relatable. But then, like, it's gotten that way only by being, like, so completely myself that people can latch onto those things. That sounds douchey, but you know what I mean.
All right. I get it, though. Like,
Whenever I went to film school, I lived in a trailer to save money. Didn't just rent it, like, I owned it. Like, it was my name on the title. Not deed. Deeds are for houses. Trailers get titles. If it's got wheels, it's a car. Like, I had to go to the Department of Motor Vehicles to buy my home. Yeah. There's a kid in front of me, 16, buying his first car, turning a new leaf in life. Behind him, buying my first trailer, turning a new leaf in life. The county that my trailer was in had a thing called a mobile home privilege tax. I don't know what the privilege was. I think it's that if a bad storm comes along, I get to die. I paid that tax 9 months late, too. I paid it when I got a letter in the mail that said, Mr. Brown, you need to pay this in 6 days, or we're going to put your name in the paper, and we're going to come take your trailer and auction it off. And I thought, fuck, it's on wheels. They could. They could bring an S10 and take my entire life. So I went and I paid the $53. Not much money, just forgot for a year. I pay it, and the lady gives me this giant lime green sticker that says paid. And she says, put this in the window of the door where everyone can see it. Do I have to? Like, can't I have a smidge of dignity? Like a little, like, could you at least give me rusty blue to match the rest of this dump? One time when I lived in the trailer, I was listening to the radio and they had tornado warnings. And it said, if you are outside or in a mobile home, seek shelter. I thought I bought shelter. All right. So a ditch is the same as my home. Good. Wow. Money well spent, Eric. I'm noticing a pattern here. Noticing a pattern. I'm not kidding. Whenever there would be tornado alarms or whatever, I would just take a handful of sleeping pills and go to bed. What, am I going to stay up and be afraid? Care? I'm either going to wake up somewhere magical or not at all. It's fine. That's why I pay that tax. I don't care. When I lived in the trailer, my girlfriend at the time moved in with me because she likes mistakes. We're married now. She loves them. We had a mouse problem. You remember. This is a shitty trailer. But like, the power box would do this thing that was where the power would just blink off randomly, and I would have to go to the power box and go chong, 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 and it would come back on for like a day or two at a time. And then I discovered I could hit the wall really hard next to it. I discovered, like, just out of anger. But then I just got, like, if I hit the wall really hard next to it, the power would stay on for, like, 2 weeks at a time, which is pretty good. You know when something's broken and you hit it and it fixes it, everyone goes, hey, Fonzie, and it's fun? It's not fun when it's the power box in your mobile home. Because you hit it and go, hey, we're going to die in a fire. We need to get our shit together. We live in a fucking car. This sucks. I don't know. Whenever I looked at the trailer, I wanted to start a magazine called Better Trailers and Dirt Lots. You know, like helpful tips for living. Like tip one is obviously if the power's not working, hit the wall. Obviously. Tip two would be how to like turn all those cigarette butts into compost for your herb garden for when you make your homemade bologna. That kind of thing. Homemade bologna is so gross. It's the grossest thing, I'm convinced. I swear it's the gross. I know everyone in here thought it would be like butts or cum. No, homemade bologna, the grossest thing a person can say. If you disagree with me, I'll tell you why you're wrong. Imagine a friend said, hey, do you want to stick around for lunch? And you say, sure, what are we having? And they say, bologna, I made it myself. You would call the cops. Go, I don't know what you did, but somebody's dead. Not eating that human loaf. Another thing I wanted to do when I lived in the trailer was do like at-risk youth tours there. Call the schools in the area and be like, hey, gather up all your intelligent but unmotivated and cynical 17-year-olds and send them to my trailer so I can show them what happens if they let it ride. I have bologna ready for the kids. I call it Daddy's Recipe. And even though I'm on the phone, I pat my belly. He knows. He knows. He'll know.
Oh, man. There's some stuff like where you're saying like about like the like power box on the wall or whatever. Yeah. You just gotta hit the wall and all this. And then like I made jokes all the time with my brother. We used to like we had this old rundown one. The one I have now is much nicer.
Yeah.
But I was like, if this place ever catches on fire, I'm going through the wall. I don't care what. I'm not worrying about going out a door or no, something that's, like, you know, fire door or something. You know, I'm making my own door.
Yeah, like, I wish I had thought of that. Yeah. That's a great joke, and that would fit right in that bit that I wrote right. about. Yeah,
but
that's
I'm like,
amazing.
I think of all that stuff. Like, I mean, like the place was so bad. Like, you know, so
yeah,
I think about that stuff, and that's exactly a lot of that material related to that trailer I had.
Yeah.
Like, but the one I own now is, like I said, much. I moved on up, you know.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. Well, good for you. Yeah. I was gonna say, there's a joke that I never could make work on the album, or on the when I would do the, you know, tour with it or whatever. It's mostly a premise, but it's just the idea of like a mobile home is a house that sucks, but if you pretend it's a boat, it's like the best boat.
Right.
Which is like, again, it's like it's about as funny as you just reacted, where you go, but there's nothing else to it. But I still, anytime I'm in a mobile home, I think of it, and I'm like, this is a really nice fucking boat.
Sure.
And that's all I think about, and I can't, never did anything with it. Yeah. But it feels true. Feels good.
I love listening to your record and a lot of records because, like, let alone the jokes are funny, but then there's, like, the people, the reactions, and when there's, like, delayed reactions sometimes and different stuff. I remember, like, I laughed harder. There's a guy that laughs on the record.
Yeah.
And like you said a joke and then like you get a little laugh and then like the guy's like you know like yeah. like I laughed harder at that guy's laugh.
Just
like,
that weird
you know,
little
like,
yeah.
You know, it was like and it was just there's a lot of that kind of stuff on a lot of those records.
Yeah.
It's about whoever gets picked up on the mic, but like
yeah.
Just cracked me up. Like, but I do that the same thing when I'm at the club. Like
yeah.
Like you know Josh Arnold?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Josh is one of my favorites. Like,
yeah.
Favorite people to watch Duke. And but like, I sat next to him at open mic one night, and him laughing made me like laugh so much harder. Like,
yeah.
You know, just like, just being around him and his laugh is contagious. Like, so it's like, there's a lot of times at the club like that. That's like just somebody else laughing at it already makes it funnier for me just to hear them laughing at it. So.
Yeah. No, for sure.
So anyway, I just I enjoy like some of those weird things in there, some of those little nuances and stuff
yeah.
and, throughout the Yeah, the record's great. Again, like I said, available wherever you're getting your digital music and stuff, and we're streaming on Spotify and things. So
yeah.
And we do have a show coming up on Sunday over at Southtown Pub. You'll be appearing over there. This part of We Are Live presents.
Yep.
Which are friends of the show. Chris has been on. Travis didn't make it out that night, but Chris is. So me and Travis have a thing going back and forth that because he hasn't been on the show yet. So he's he teases me about it. But I've been on their show too, and like we're friendly and
That's awesome.
So I love those guys and what they're doing for comedy and, and for the city and
doing
stuff.
Doing really
so,
cool stuff.
Yeah. So We Are Live presents Dave Stone over at Southtown Pub, and you can catch Eric over there and Kelsey McClure on Sunday, June 17th.
Yep.
And it's going to be a fun night for sure, man.
Show's at 7, doors at 6. Yeah. And, it's kind of an earlier show. That's the only reason I point the time. Most shows start at 8, I think.
Yeah. Seven. Well, it's a Sunday. You know,
I know.
So.
It's a good time for it. I just wanted to verify 7. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah,
you still make it home for, you know, get ready for bed for work in the morning.
Pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much.
Do we need tickets or just cash the door?
God, I should know that. It's $12. There's a Facebook event, and you probably pay when you get there. But I think there are tickets online as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Didn't think that far ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can probably pay some cash at the door and be all right.
I would think so. Yeah. That's normally how that could work.
Yeah.
Well, We Are Live. They're pretty good. I bet there's tickets online. They're good about that stuff.
Well, do some research.
Come to the show. Just come to the show.
We didn't do the research, but you can go ahead and do some research.
Yeah, you Google it. You're sitting at a computer right now. You do it.
When that come out? That was like earlier this year, or
About a month and a half ago. I put it all on digital and because I recorded it in October of last year, and then kind of honestly neglected it for a few months because I didn't want to deal with listening to it, and then finally got around to editing it, yada yada, and released it about 6 weeks ago. Okay. I think just kind of online, just floated it out there. So
and that I imagine that's probably good though too, to kind of separate for a minute. Like,
that's why I wanted to do it.
Yeah,
because it's a thing where I'm never really happy with anything I do, so I recorded the album, we recorded two shows, did all that, and then I wanted to get to it immediately, but I couldn't make myself sit and listen to my own voice for an hour and then another hour of the same show. It seemed like torture. So then I waited a few months and then finally was like, you know what, it's either now or never. So I started listening to it and kind of figuring out which edits I want, because it's two shows that we cut into one, obviously. So giving it three or four months of past recording it and then listening to it to work on it, I actually could enjoy the stand-up again, because I recorded it and didn't do any of those jokes anymore. I haven't repeated really any of them since. So giving it that several month gap, I could listen to it and be like, okay, that's pretty funny. I like this joke I wrote. Whereas opposed to if I did it a week later, I would have been like, this is all garbage.
Yeah.
I hate this. I should die. Oh, what am I doing? You know, but a healthy distance made it where I could kind of enjoy it and approach it a little more objectively and just go, you know, I am proud of this. It's not awful. You know what I mean? Which for me, that's not awful. It's pretty good.
Well, I know the feeling, man. I edit the show every night. So definitely pick up on all the dumb stuff you say, and you're like, man, why do I, you know? So, but like I said, it's nice that I'm the one in control of the editing and so I can,
my friend Mike. Mike Petrovich, he does music, all kinds of stuff, but he did the editing for me because he does music editing, and he did this for me for free. I got him I bought him a record as a way of saying thanks, but he'd never done spoken word editing like this before. So he was like, I'll use my good equipment, and he has nice studio equipment, yada yada. He's like, I will edit it for free just so I can get the practice in on it. And then so basically we sat in front of his computer together for about 6 hours, just kind of honestly playing with audio levels and trying to find that mix between me and the room, and because we set up recorders everywhere in the room and all the stuff, so blending the audio and making it sound like a real record as opposed to, we were talking about earlier, a show versus two people talking. We were trying to make it sound like an album as opposed to me just talking to a room of people, you know what I mean? So trying to do all that and then editing and kind of moving things around a little bit. It was good. I'm glad we did it. But just for 6 hours roughly total sitting there, just staring at his computer being like, go back and turn that up, like, turn that up just a little bit. Okay, I like that. That sounds good. And, like, just really combing through it, like, too obsessively for what it is, really. But
I've heard, like, Seinfeld apparently records, like, every show and then, like, listen, like, he'll do two shows a night and then, like, listens to the first show to critique himself to go out and do the second show.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
I believe that.
I mean, yeah, like, it's probably why he's one of the best, but it's like, at the same time, I'm like, man, there's no way I could do that, like, listen to myself that much and, like...
You get used to it, which sounds crazy, but, like, I don't listen to myself as much as I should, but, like, when I was prepping to record the album, because I set the date, I did it in October, I set the date maybe in, like, June or May, even, of last year. And how I got the album ready was I would basically go on the road for a week or 10 days at a time and set it up where I could coordinate it, where I could do it the hour every single night for 7 or 8 days in a row. And what I would do is I would do, let's just say I would go to like Fayetteville, Arkansas. Okay, I'll do the hour that night, record my set on my phone, and then the next day, like go to sleep wherever I'm at. The next day, drive to the next city I'm going to be at, go to a coffee shop, put on my headphones, listen to the entire hour from the night before, and write down, okay, don't do this. Oh, you ad-lib that line, add that in, that's funny. Oh, this isn't really making sense anymore, this doesn't work, so fix it, and kind of do that. And then I would repeat the hour again the next night with the work I had done, and then record it, and then the next day, go to a coffee shop, and do literally the same thing, like a comedy boot camp.
Yeah.
So it's not as extreme as listening to it and then doing it again immediately,
right.
But like every single day, working on it for 2 or 3 hours, and then doing it at night, recording it, fixing it, So basically, I would leave for a week, I would leave with it being like, you know, in this shape. And by the time I get back home, it's already this much better from just sort of having nothing to do in a different city except obsessing over syllable count and wording and all this weird little stuff that you don't... When you first start stand-up, you're like, I just want to tell some jokes. And then after you do it for a while, you're like, I want to tell some good jokes. And then you go, I want to tell some great jokes. And like the bar keeps raising. And so... But yeah, that's how I got the album ready, was literally listening to it and critiquing it and listening to it over and over. I'm in the process now, since I recorded it, all those jokes are dead, so I have a new hour I'm trying to work on, basically doing the same thing, just writing it, recording it, listening to it, editing it, blah, 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 forever.
Yeah. That's what I do love about the art of comedy, though. I mean, like, yeah, you're saying it's a ton of work there, but, like, but those simple little things, I mean, it could be one word, it could be the timing, like it could be a simple pause before, and then like then that punchline kills then all of a sudden.
Yeah.
It's like it's just like those little tweaks, and like you sometimes it's like it's like in a Rubik's Cube or whatever, you gotta like keep and then you finally find the right fit and it works, and it so
the weirdest thing is whenever you have a joke or a bit or whatever that works, and then you do it the same way one night and it just stops working. And you're like, well, and you listen to it, and you're like, well, no, it still sounds the same. You listen to the older one where it worked, and you listen to the new one where it doesn't. And you're like, what the fuck changed? Like, how, why? Because the inflection's the same, everything's the same. And this is a long-winded way of saying, like, I'm obsessed with authenticity. And so, like, if I don't, like, but you can feel, like, when a comedian is just running lines, or a performer at all, when they're running lines versus really... really giving you the whole thing, like I'm giving you myself versus I'm gonna make it sound like I am.
Sure.
And like with stand-up, like again, from, you listen to my record or album, whatever, a lot of what I do ends up being funny because I really believe in it. I'm not a great joke writer, I know that. I can pull it off, but I don't really I'm not jokey as much. A lot of what I do only works if I really am behind it, and it's a lot of like really pushing the narrative and really committing to whatever I'm doing. But you don't realize it, but whenever that starts to fade away, you're just up there pretending that you still care, and people can read that on you bad.
Sure.
And those are the hardest ones to fix because you go, well, I can't make myself care again.
Right.
Well, I guess this bit's dead. I'm going to throw it out rather than like go up and for 4 minutes, I have to pretend to really give it the old, you know what I mean? I don't even know.
Well, you have to sort of, I feel like some of the better performers deliver it like it's the first time.
Oh yeah.
You know, you have even a song, even a singer songwriters or whatever, like there's, you have, especially like some that's a real personal sad song or whatever, you still have to deliver it like every time, even if it hurts, like you have to bring that out like and show that, because, you know, even like, say, comedy too. It's like,
yeah,
if you're not putting that into it, then yeah, we can see right through it.
I know, so. It's weird though. Like, it's great,
yeah.
And I think it keeps artists honest. Where, like, I always think about that, like a musician who has to play, not has to, but would choose to play, like the Rolling Stones have been famous for literally forever. I'll say that. And so if they go on tour, they're going to play songs that they wrote when they were 20 years old.
Yeah.
And they're going to play them with the same intensity or the same, like, passion.
Right.
And it's like, how the hell? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that would be so hard to repeat a joke.
Sure.
For 40 years and still give a shit about it at all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's why
it's crazy.
That's probably why Ron White drinks as much whiskey as he does.
I bet it might be part of it.
Or scotch or whatever.
Yeah, the little glass. Yeah. I don't know what it is.
Because he's been doing that tater salad joke for forever. Like,
but you know what? It still works. Yeah. So I guess I keep collecting your check.
Right. I love Ron, but yeah.
No,
like,
same.
I went back and I watched some of, like, early special, and he was doing tater salad, and then, like, Blue Collar tour come out 20 years later and he's still doing blue tater salad and all that stuff. I'm like,
since Blue Collar tour, though, I think the tater salad thing has fallen. I think people are like, all right, like that bit got you big.
All right.
You've done it enough. Let's move on. But yeah, no, absolutely.
But there's a lot of those guys. You know, and I think working clubs, a lot of guys could get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why a lot of guys, like, you know, when guys like Louis C.K. came out and started doing, like, Carlin even doing, like, a special a year and everything, and, like, and started doing all that kind of stuff. A lot of guys, like, had to, like, learn to step up their game.
Like,
if I want to keep working,
yeah,
I can't keep doing the same jokes every time I come to the city and stuff.
We think of it this way. It's like with a comedian, like, I think one of the worst things that you could pigeonhole yourself in as a comedian, I guess an artist in general, but I'll say comedian because that's where I'm at, is like, it would bum me out so bad if people were like, oh, Eric's coming through town, I don't need to go, I've seen him and I know exactly what he does.
All right.
And it's like, well, fuck, then I'm failing.
Yeah.
Like, because you want to always be better and you always want to have something new to offer. Like, the new stuff I'm working on, I'm still the same person, so it sounds like the other album. It's way better, I think. Not to say you shouldn't listen to the album. It's a fine album. But the new stuff is exciting to me. But it's like, it's still the same personality. The humor comes from the same kind of places, but it's all different, and I think it's an improvement.
Yeah.
Creatively, it's a departure. But I would hate the idea of, if I did this thing, and then in 5 years I was still repeating those jokes, and somebody came back, and they were like, I heard all of this stuff a couple of years ago, and it's not any different. Like, that just seems like a massive failure to me.
It is funny how, like you were just saying about Stones playing the same song, and somehow, like, comedy, we want to hear all new stuff.
Uh-huh.
But I went to see Brian Regan a while back, a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And people were, like, you know, requesting bits.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like, in the middle of, like, the beginning of a show, people are like, you know, Pop-Tart or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, basically how to tell him to shut up, like, you know, hey, I'll get to it, like, and he does like a greatest hits kind of thing at the end of the show.
Yeah, I've heard,
like,
that. Yeah,
heard, like, his encore.
Yeah,
I mean, he's got so many classics that everybody wants to hear. But it's like, what? Why is that? I mean, it's still funny, but, like, why is it funny to you if you do the joke along with him? You know, like, you already know the punchline and stuff.
Right. Like, Brian Regan is one of the few comedians. I'm saying this with no level of expertise, but where he can come out and people are like, do the bit about the thing.
Yeah.
Do the solar system thing. And it's like, it is weird. Because, like, there's not, that doesn't really exist.
But if he doesn't do it, then people feel disappointed.
Yeah.
Like, even though you just saw an hour of greatness.
You saw an hour that's great, and it's funny, and you hadn't heard it before.
Right.
Totally fresh, and you just want to hear boxing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, which is, again, very funny, but it is weird. And I'm so glad that doesn't, I don't think that happens to most comedians.
Yeah.
And I feel bad for him that does happen a little bit.
Well, he's at superstar level now.
Yeah.
Gaffigan's the same way.
Oh, man. Guys. I bet people do holler at Gaffigan, Hot Pockets.
Yeah,
and they just want to hear the bit that,
I think if you, that's what I loved. There was a great line in Chappelle's special.
One of the new ones?
Before he, like, went to Africa and all that stuff.
Is it the thing where he's talking about being at Disney World?
Yeah.
And they're going to Rick James, but he goes, I'm here with my kids.
Yeah, and he's like, I mean, like, that's just a small glimpse. Like, that's his daily life. Was everybody was saying, "I'm Rick James, bitch," to him. And I'm like, that's why he went crazy. Like, you know, like I would go crazy. Like, you know, that stuff gets so old. Like when people, you know, like you can't shut off. When those guys are at that level, they can't shut off. Like, hey, you're just a person. Like, no, it's like, you know, dance for me. Like, go ahead and do the show. I don't know.
It seems like a bummer. Like, lucky for me, I don't think I'll ever be that famous. So, which is very convenient. But I think that I couldn't like I said at the very top of the thing, like, if I know you well or whatever, then I'm pretty talkative. I'm very open, pretty talkative. If I don't, I am very quiet and kind of withdrawn. So, like, like after shows, like if I go to a show just anywhere and I'm the headliner and I do whatever, afterwards, if people want to talk to me, like, that's great. But the only thing that we have to talk about is what you just saw me do. So we really don't have anything to talk about because I don't want to talk about what I just did. Like, I'd rather just say, like, so what's your life like? Like, what do you do? But it's, I guess the point being is, it stresses me out to no end. Always, anytime anyone wants to talk to me about, like, stand-up, because it's like, you heard the jokes. Like, there's not much else. I'm not going to tell you anything else about it. Like, you heard it. I don't want to talk about it anymore. Yeah. What's fun to do around here? Sure. Like, that guy's dead right now. What's up with you? You know? Right. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. But. Yeah, man. Well, you can come... talk to Eric after the show.
Please don't. Come say hi and then move away.
Again, Sunday, June 17th at Southtown Pub. What's that? What's that street? I don't know.
I'm blanking on this. Southtown Pub. Oh, is it King's Highway?
Probably. I think so.
Let's do one where you can edit it out if it's wrong. Southtown Pub is on King's Highway, and you can just remove that if that's wrong.
There you go.
Yeah.
I don't have that technology, though, so we're going to leave it.
Oh, no. It might not be on King's Highway.
Everybody's going to be driving down King's Highway looking for it now. And you got one of those fancy Google machines in your pocket. Go ahead and punch it in there.
Yeah, for sure.
So Sunday, June 17th with Dave Stone over there.
Yeah.
Going to be a great night. Dave's doing big things. You were saying he's got his own podcast. Comedy Central. And,
does. Yeah. He's
late
he's,
nights and all that fun stuff. So
he's super funny. He's a great, great person.
Yep.
Yeah.
Again, pick up Patterns wherever you're downloading music. Why Patterns? Do you have a particular?
Okay. In the album, I have a throwaway line where I say I'm noticing a pattern about a couple of multiple failures. And I just say, oh, you know, I'm noticing a pattern, Eric, kind of third person. And then I was going to call the album Noticing a Pattern. And then the guy, Jay Whitecotton, who did the art for it, because I said I wanted something kind of impressionist, like Monet sort of thing. There's a bit about Monet on it. I wanted something impressionist and kind of minimalist. And I told him to call it Noticing a Pattern. And then he ended up just calling it Patterns as, like, the test to send to me. And I liked the way it looked a lot better than having, like, so many syllables for Noticing a Pattern. It's not a very exciting story. But anyway, I just went with Patterns because it still fits what I wanted it to do.
Sure.
And it's kind of a joke on, and again, you should listen to the album. It's very good. I'm proud of it. But I wanted to call it Noticing a Pattern for two reasons. A, or Patterns, because of the patterns of kind of failure. And then also just the writing patterns because of I was developing it stand-up for all the bits that are on the album. And so when I listen to it, I'm like, oh, that bit sounds like this other bit. And again, it's a fine album. You should listen to it. But there's parts of it that I can tell because I wrote it, and I'm looking back at all the body of work, that there's a sort of collective threads that I'm really leaning into, kind of hard, like death, dying, mutilation, just sort of like black humor and death being the ultimate failure, all those things. So those are patterns, so it's kind of me calling the album Patterns as a way to make fun of myself for being redundant in my writing to an extent.
Yeah.
So it's... again, it's good. You should listen to it. But it is also just me making fun of myself for being not as good of a writer as I wish I were.
Sure.
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah. Like I said, you're already writing new stuff, so hopefully, maybe we'll get another record sometime soon.
I was going to say, if you listen to the album and you like it, come see me Sunday. I'm featuring. I'm doing like 20 minutes or 25 minutes. It will be all different stuff than the album.
Right.
So if you really love the album and you really want to know what I'm working on, come out on the 17th and you'll hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And can we get involved with you online? Do we have a...
Oh, I use Twitter a little bit, at Eric Brown Sucks. My website is ericbrownsucks.com. Just getting ahead of the critics. That's all I got to do.
Right. That's always a funny. There's a podcast I listen to about last night, and they, you know, they go into a lot sometimes. Like people will talk about that they have a weird Twitter handle or whatever. You know, the Eric Brown or whatever. You know, because it's like somebody already took the Eric Brown handle or whatever. So it's like. And then they find it's always a funny conversation when they're like, "Oh yeah, it's like a real estate agent or different stuff." So it is tricky being a comedian trying to find use your name and find a handle sometimes.
Yeah, like my name is Eric Brown. Do you know how many of us there are? All of them. We're all Eric Brown. And like, I wanted to do like Eric Brown, like at Eric Brown would have been ideal, or like the website Eric Brown. And like you said, it's like literally like a realtor, like a college professor, somebody. Just they already bought it all. And I didn't want to do Eric Brown comedy. Because I'm not, do whatever you want. I'm not crazy about the name comedy.com or whatever. So I just was like, what is something that no reasonable person would want?
Right.
And it's like, oh, nobody wants Eric Brown sucks. Because if your name's Eric, why would you make fun of yourself? And you go, okay, it's perfect.
Yeah.
And it's just available on all platforms. Please don't buy it and try to sell it to me for an inflated price. But Eric Brown sucks is available everywhere. So that's what I ended up just leaning into because I was mad that nothing else was available. And now I'm like, okay. I'll take it.
Nice.
In there.
Yeah. So head on over to ericbrownsucks.com.
Yeah.
And tell them what you think of the record. So.
Yeah. Do it.
Well, thanks, buddy. This has been a whole lot of fun.
Absolutely. And, thank you for having me.
Thanks to St. Louis Bread Company /Panera.
Thank you.
For their hospitality this and
delicious bottomless coffee and this nice table.
Yeah. But yeah, man, I'll see you soon.
Absolutely.
Thanks, man.
Of course. Thank you.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.